You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Fabulous Peltoncast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Caracino.
And we are coming to you from Boulevard Park, Washington, the original home of the Peltoncast, for this special episode recapping one of the most thrilling wins in Seahawks regular season history.
Whoa! Oh, man. This was a feel-good win, I have to say.
Wait, was it?
Looking back at some of the greatest games that I've been to, Seahawks games that I've been to. I'm sorry if my voice is a little bit hoarse. I did a lot of cheering.
Unlike the people around you, apparently.
We're going to talk about them in a second.
Okay.
But maybe not a second. At some point during this conversation. But this was, I mean, a lot of people mentioned the Pittsburgh game that was on, I think, a Sunday night a couple years ago.
No, it was a Sunday afternoon. Kobe Bryant retired during the game, and I had to sit, like, writing a column during that crazy, intense Pittsburgh
game. It was such a good game, but I think that this game exceeded that. I think that if I had to go back and rank greatest games that I have ever been to, I think I've been to a couple NFC championships. Number one NFC championship against the 49ers to go to the Super Bowl for the first time in the Pete Carroll era.
Really? Ahead of the Green Bay one. Interesting.
You know what? It was the tip. That tip was such a huge play.
Yeah, I mean, it meant more because the Seahawks had never, they'd been to the Super Bowl, but had never won the Super Bowl at that point.
And then number two is the second NFC championship game against Green Bay, the one that you just mentioned. I think this is number three.
Really? So ahead of all the other playoff games.
You know, they haven't played that many good playoff games except for those NFC championship games. And part of those are kind of the magnitude. But this was just such a fun game to watch. And it's not just that it was a close game or that it was an exciting game. It's that we got to see such an exciting quarterback on the Houston side, right? We got to see, apologies to Ben B. Deshaun Watson is who I'm choosing. Like, I don't care about Dak, right? If you had to give me one quarterback in the post-Russell Wilson era who I'm choosing, it's Deshaun Watson.
I mean, I don't think that's that controversial. The Ben B is that against that. Our other loyal listener, former Third Pelton Brothers,
Third Pelton Brother.
Zach Whitman tweeted, I am quite glad to not face Deshaun Watson for another 4 years.
Well, let's just take a step back and maybe say we might face Deshaun Watson before another 4 years are over. But I've got a bone to pick before we get there. Okay, so I want to go through this game, right? But I'm at your house.
That is accurate.
We're here. We are live from Boulevard Park, Washington, and it is 2 days before Halloween.
That is also accurate.
And you chose Kit Kats to give out.
So.
This is not the worst Halloween candy.
It's definitely
this
not the worst.
This is the second worst Halloween candy after Three Musketeers.
Kit Kats are not that
bad. Three Musketeers are the worst candy you could have given out. Kit Kats are number two.
Come on. Your children have allergy concerns, you'll note. And
they're allergic to Kit Kats too.
Yeah, I know. But I didn't want to do anything with nuts. And then second off, I didn't want to get anything too good, because I didn't want to be too tempted to eat all of that after, like, two people come trick-or-treating at my house.
You didn't want to get anything too good? Okay.
Yeah.
First off, I don't agree with that logic.
I wanted to get Skittles so that I could give them to you so that you could give them to your children afterwards.
They
apparently don't have those at Fred Meyer.
We're going to have a shitload of Skittles. That is not a worry. You don't have to give me any Skittles.
No, I'm saying so I don't have candy around, because if I have candy around, I'm going to eat it. But I'm also logical enough to know that I don't want to eat it, so I want to get it away.
What about Kit Kats? Do you want to eat Kit Kats? How did you settle on Kit Kats vis-a-vis Milky Ways or Reese's Peanut Butter Cups?
Again, I wanted to do something without nuts or peanut butter, which you note that Reese's
Milky Ways do not have peanut butter. Okay, so
I would take Kit Kat over Milky Way all day.
Oh,
Why are we wasting time
on Tuesday? On Tuesday, here's a promise that I'm making to you.
All right.
We are going to rank our top five candy bars.
That's fine.
Maybe not candy bars. We're going to rank our top five candies.
Halloween candies.
Halloween candies. Also, I wanted to come here and drink a cool frosty Rainier. Right after the Seahawks victory, the third best victory in the Pete Carroll or Russell Wilson era, right? Because this was a more important victory than the Saints playoff victory that Pete Carroll won without Russell Wilson, right?
The Beastquake was nothing compared to this.
And I'm drinking, this is the best that I found in your fridge, was a Session Black Cherry Lager.
Basically all the beer that is in my fridge right now is left over, I think, from last Christmas.
Wow.
I'm not drinking a lot at home alone.
Well, to reference our Rap Yearbook podcast, I've got a bone to pick. Well, anyway, we should talk about the Seahawks game.
All right, so you wanted to go through this drive by drive and sort of go through the highs and lows because there were a lot of mood swings, it's safe to say,
in this game. The storylines evolved throughout the game.
So we come out, Seahawks defer. Always like to see that. It takes Houston precisely 5 plays to score on a 59-yard pass.
What did Houston do, by the way, for the anthem?
The word was that a handful of players stood, but the vast majority of players kneeled.
So can we talk about this for 1 second? Because we talked about this on Friday when news of when the Bobby Mayer quote came out from the Seth Wickersham story on ESPN, and people kept treating it as if it was a quote-unquote distraction, right?
I mean, I tweeted to that extent.
The line at that point moved 1.5 points toward the Seahawks.
That's what we saw on Twitter.
And I said to you, this doesn't make sense.
You did?
And you said, why do you think you're smarter than both you, Kevin Pelton, ESPN Insider, and Las Vegas?
That is what I said.
Who's right?
It did not appear to distract them, particularly on that opening drive or at any point during the game.
The teams.
It only distracted their defense.
Let me just ask you, do you think DeAndre Hopkins was distracted in this game?
He didn't seem super distracted after missing practice on Friday.
Like, I don't know what DeAndre Hopkins' career high was, but the 224 yards or whatever he gained in this game had to be in.
Notably, it's the most yardage against the Seahawks by a receiver in the Pete Carroll era, eclipsing Marcus Wheaton in that aforementioned Pittsburgh game.
But just to combat the idea of storylines right from the beginning, right? We went into this game knowing there was going to be some kind of storyline. And you know what? It went out the window.
It did. That's true.
Right? These protests and Bob McNair's statements that came out through the Seth Wickersham story do not matter at this point. I mean, matter.
Way, let's give Don Van Natta Jr. also was co-author of that story with Seth Wickersham.
But they don't matter in terms of the Seahawks versus Texans game. So I was pleased to see that. And people try to treat the Seahawks play the game in Tennessee right after there was kind of the widespread conversation about kneeling during the anthem. And they try to treat it as though it was a distraction and part of the reason that Seahawks lost that game. And they didn't realize they lost that game because they're not very good. So anyway, Will Fuller on the first series.
Because they tried to run too much. Gets behind Earl Thomas. An atypically poor angle to the ball, it looked like, by Earl Thomas on that play, where he was distracted by a tight end crossing.
He was distracted by the anthem protests?
Not by the anthem.
No, anyway.
And so was unable to recover and give Shaquille Griffin help on that side. I mean, Will Fuller has been doing this all season, but teams almost never do it to the Seahawks, so that's why it was so surprising. Seahawks come back and go 3-and-out. And boy, Russell Wilson did not look sharp on that first drive, missing his 2 pass attempts. One of which...
I thought one of them was a Doug Baldwin drop.
No, it wasn't dropped. It may have been tipped, but it was not a drop. So go 3-and-out, and Houston immediately drives the ball into Seattle territory with a 27-yard pass to DeAndre Hopkins. And all of a sudden, it's looking like the Seahawks could be staring at a multiple-score deficit until they get Houston in 3rd and 10. And Earl Thomas did not take a bad route on this pass. Reading it, jumping the route, and returning his interception 78 yards for a pick 6.
Oh, Earl to the house. Such an amazing play. I mean, we've talked about this in the past with Third Pelton brother Mike Seahawks Scout about how when the Seahawks have a defensive touchdown, they have a poor record. In this case, fortunately, that's not the case. But it reminded me of this tweet that I think was that Zach Whitman had around this time period, which was Watson is a fascinating mix of 80% MVP play and 20% throws that aren't close to the receiver.
I mean, I think that's sort of what I said on last week's pod and when we were previewing this game, that he does have a tendency to be erratic at times. And we only saw it basically, I mean, and this wasn't necessarily erratic. This was probably more a bad decision because the pass wasn't necessarily inaccurate. It's just that there was a defender in the way of it.
Yes. But this was the first time that we saw that the Seahawks making a huge play. And I mean, honestly, it was early, but this pick 6 mattered a lot.
Especially in the wake of the next drive where Houston immediately marches down and scores another touchdown and looks completely unstoppable.
Yes.
In the process.
This could have easily been a 21-0 game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man.
So, well, I mean, I think one thing that did happen on that play that became a theme, Seahawks were able to get Houston in 3rd and long on that Earl Thomas interception came on 3rd and 10. And when the Texans, like all teams, but when the Texans are off schedule, they're a very different offense. But they did not face a single 3rd down on that subsequent drive. and they marched down the field. Let's see here. 8 plays, 82 yards. That was maybe the most impressive because that was really more of a sustained drive.
Do you think that the defense was at all tired on that series? Because that's what we were kind of guessing at that point, was they have the drive, they had the pick six. It takes energy for pick six, right? Yeah. And then boom, you're right back on the field. And then Houston obviously is a good offense, and they're coming right back at you.
And I think that, you know, the amount of motion we saw, you know, the variance of the option, the Seahawks did a slightly better job of dealing with those as the game went on. In the early going, they did not really have an answer. And then also rollouts and, you know, biting hard on play action and then a rollout across the play and, you know, get going, get that misdirection going. That was a struggle for them. So in that context of the Seahawks defense being tired, a very important drive then by the Seahawks offense to go 75 yards in 8 plays for a matching touchdown to again even the game. And a case where one of the best offensive fumbles in Seahawks history.
love this challenge. When Pete threw that challenge out, I just love the idea of teams challenging something that's negative for them because it's a positive for them.
I mean, it was interesting. So on the broadcast, they didn't show the recovery.
Oh,
so
really?
In watching in real time, I was like, is that an empty hand? That looks like that could be a fumble, but didn't know who was going to be challenging it. I thought that Houston might have recovered it, in which case, obviously, Bill O'Brien would have been the one to challenge it. But a great challenge by the Seahawks, and one that ends up translating into a touchdown when Russell Wilson scrambles around. A nice recovery block by Reese Odhiambo on Jadeveon Clowney on that play, and finds Paul Richardson in the end zone for the touchdown. The first of many. So then the Seahawks hold Houston to 3 and out, and then they go 3 and out and have -4 yards on a for you, the first of many negative rushing plays in this game, a 4-yard loss on 1st and 10, followed by 2 incompletions. At this point, the offense looking a little questionable. Houston again marches down the field, 11 plays, 84 yards, this time Will Fuller's second touchdown of the game from 20 yards out. This is another amazing play by Deshaun Watson.
That was an amazing play by Deshaun Watson. And also on this series, kind of the thing that stood out the most was, you know, you had talked about what the Seahawks had done against Tyrod Taylor. This was Deshaun Watson running the ball. On the series, he had a run for 18 yards, just a casual run for 18 yards on, I think it was 2nd and 12. On a 2nd and 12, he just easily picks up the first down. Also has another run later in the series where this was like, this is a quarterback who brings an element that they're not seeing. Obviously, they're not seeing in Eli Manning and may not see in another quarterback again all season.
Oh, well, yeah.
Even in Dak, I just don't think it's there. I think Deshaun
I think that Watson is better than the scrambler.
Deshaun Watson brings an element that they're not going to see in any other game.
They're not going to see the combination of elements that we saw from Houston in terms of their receivers and Deshaun Watson's ability to move. Seahawks again answer the score with a touchdown of their own, going 75 yards in 6 plays. This time, the key play. Welcome back from the wilderness. The man they call Macklemore. Tanner McAvoy. T-Mac. T-Mac is back. 53-yard catch. Held on.
He rode back into this like he was Raven Bowie. I mean, what a play by Tanner McAvoy. So the series starts out with a -6-yard loss for Eddie Lacy. One of those losses that would make this running performance so historically bad, right? Did they break any records in this one?
Well, no, because of the fact that Wilson ended up scrambling at the end. So those rushing yards get added to the team total. If you were looking strictly at the running back performance, they did end this game with 2 yards. 2 yards.
As that ball's in the air, I said,
I'm sorry. Oh, wait, I'm shortchanging them.
They got up to 5 yards.
They got up to 5 on...
You said on Vancouver radio that they ran for 2 yards.
On
but
16
I was
carries.
Over here correcting you. 16 yeah. carries for 5 yards.
Wow. A dominant rushing performance. They ran for 15 feet on 16 carries. 15. And this has nothing to do with the running backs.
Let's just say... It has something to
no,
do.
No, it has nothing.
It has something to do with the running backs. It does not have nothing to do with the running backs.
When you're getting hit 5 yards beyond the line of scrimmage, there's nothing a running back can do about that.
It is both. It
that's you just cannot call a run, and certainly not to Jadeveon Clowney's side of the field because Reese Odhiambo did not have a prayer of blocking him in the run game.
I mean, we should be down on our knees. Speaking of prayers, praying that J.J. Watt and Whitney Mercilus did not play in this game,
despite the prediction from Shea Serrano that he would, that JJ Watt, despite being on IR, would come back and play this.
But 15 carries for 6 yards is an unbelievable stat.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is.
It's something where...
No, it's also pretty unbelievable about it. The 15 carries.
Well, you know what? The 15 carries happened pretty early, right?
Most of them. I mean, the last couple of drives, they did completely abandon the run. And at some coincidentally, point, they moved the football.
Yeah, shockingly. Moved the football quite a bit easier. At some point, you have to say to yourself, this is not a team that can be a balanced team. This is not the Seahawks team that we saw 4 or 5 years ago, right? I mean, the Marshawn Lynch Seahawks are merely a memory. Those are ghosts of Seahawks.
No, I'm sorry,
past.
Not the Marshawn Lynch Seahawks, the Russell Okung Seahawks. Because again, it's not about the running backs. Running backs don't matter. It's about the offensive line.
Okung was here during that Thomas Rawls year. The year he was good.
He was, and then he departed.
Okay, all right. I'll give it to Okung. I think it may be a coincidence. Russell Okung may be a coincidence.
I mean, I don't think
he missed a lot of games during that time period.
I don't think it's entirely Russell Okung. I'm just saying it's the offensive line, not the running backs.
But this is not that team. And the Seahawks, I appreciate that they recognized at some point that they cannot run the ball. And my hope is that going forward, that they use the run so sparingly that we're surprised when the Seahawks run the ball.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. There's zero chance of that happening. That's not going to happen. So then the teams trade 3 punts, and then the Seahawks got the ball with 4 seconds left. Took a knee, kneeled out the half. Going to halftime tied at 21. How are you feeling about this game at that point?
Feeling pretty good. And this was the point where we started comparing it to that Pittsburgh game, right? Where we looked at it. I
thought we started comparing it to that Pittsburgh game last week when we previewed it, didn't we? That came up, right? At some point.
I don't know if that came up.
All right.
But I think it was Vince Verhey on Twitter who mentioned that this was the first time, I think, in the Pete Carroll era that both teams have scored 20 points in the first half.
That is correct.
Kind of unbelievable that that hasn't happened.
I mean, there's not that many times that the opponent has scored 20 points in the first half. The last time that happened, I went looking that up, was Arizona 2 years ago on Sunday Night Football.
Yes.
Suffice it to say, the Seahawks did not score 20 points in that first half.
And the other interesting thing about it is that most often defenses... or the opponents are not scoring 20 points, right? Is that we have to really rethink what the Seahawks defense is. If the Texans are coming into Seattle, I mean, we know where this ended, but if the Texans are coming into Seattle and scoring this type of points, we have to rethink what this team is starting ground up, right?
It's just not going to happen because Pete Carroll's relentless positivity makes him believe that the defense is going to be able to get stops. And we'll talk about this in a bit when it comes up in the game. But there's just...
They got one important stop.
That's just never going to be his philosophy because that's too realistic for Pete Carroll. And I say that with great admiration because you know what? Pete Carroll's optimism has produced many great things. It did not produce great things on the first drive of the second half when the Seahawks... pick up a first down on a 13-yard pass to Doug Baldwin, then go J.D. McKissick for 3 yards, Eddie Lacy for no gain, 3rd and 7, Russell Wilson sacked. The Texans answer that with a field goal, or follow that with a field goal. A case where, let's see, this was one, they picked up the 3rd and 14 on the Deshaun Watson scramble, 3rd and 14 from the 38. Why is Frank Clark rushing inside on this play? You don't need a sack. You just need to not give up a first down. Just make them take the field. And unfortunately, the Seahawks were able to get them to...
Do you think in general they are good at containing Deshaun Watson?
I think they were good at sacking Deshaun Watson. I do not think they were good at containing Deshaun Watson.
It felt like their game plan did not change because of Deshaun Watson, right? Would you agree with that assessment?
Right. 8 carries for 67 yards in this game.
Oh, my God. It felt like Deshaun Watson is good.
He's very good.
But it didn't feel like they went into this game saying, we are going to always have a spy on Deshaun Watson. They said, we are going to play our normal defense, and if our normal defense so happens to stop Deshaun Watson from being able to run the ball, so be it. I was watching, there was like an NFL preview show that was on late last night, and they were talking about Tyrod Taylor, and they were like, here's how the Seahawks stopped Tyrod Taylor last year. And they just showed the normal defense rushing the ball, or rushing the passer, and happening to stop Tyrod Taylor. It's like, they didn't do anything special here.
Wait, did they just show Richard Sherman chucking the receiver when Taylor went out of the pocket on the final play? Because how they stopped.
This was a play that Frank Clark happened to be in the way of Tyrod Taylor being able to run the ball, but it wasn't like they did anything special to stop Tyrod Taylor. And that was my impression of this game. Look, the Seahawks are going to do what they're going to do, and they did that against Deshaun Watson.
All right, so the Seahawks come back, and again, this was a theme in this game, matched score for score. The key play on their six-play 75-yard drive, a 66-yard pass to Trey Patton leaking out of the backfield with no one around him. It turns out the upside of using a fullback just to block is that every once in a while, especially when that fullback is a converted running back, you can hit them for a big pass play.
I thought this was Thomas Rawls live, and a third Putton brother, Chris, who was with me, was like, if that would have been Thomas Rawls, he would have scored. And I'm like, yeah, maybe. Maybe. I was like, go, Rawls, go. But it was clear that it was Trey Madden when he got caught easily.
So
kind of an amazing play.
Shouts to Trey Madden. Look, my issue has never been with Trey Madden individually. It's always been with the existence of the fullback position is a general conceit.
I've had some issues with Trey Madden individually.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably fair. So after that, that got Seahawks first and 10 at the Houston 12. They completed a 9-yard pass to Jimmy Graham to get to second and 1 at the Houston 3. Then Thomas Rawls runs for no game.
Ugh.
And then Thomas Rawls out of the backfield, unable to pull down a high pass from Russell Wilson.
It wasn't necessarily Russell Wilson's fault, but this is the first of two consecutive series where we need to talk about the Seahawks not going for it on fourth and short at the goal line.
Yes, because Pete Carroll was playing this game as if it was, hey, let's score, let's tie the game, our defense will take care of business.
Yes.
And they did, in fact, after this drive. But again, as you're saying, that was not the right approach for this particular matchup.
On these two consecutive series that we're talking about here, this series and the one we'll talk about next, the Seahawks could have opened up a lead in this game.
Yes.
They could have made it such that they didn't need the last second heroics to win this game, right?
Yes.
They could have had Houston down trying to come back. And if you're not going to go for it on fourth down, why do you throw that pass to Thomas Rawls on third down?
I mean, I think because you think it's your best chance of scoring on third down.
You don't need to score. There was a chance of a first down there. You need 1 yard.
I mean, that would have.
That's it. You don't need to score.
So would you have suggested they run it?
Yes.
No. They couldn't run for 1 yard. That's inconceivable that they could have run for 1 yard. It is not possible. There is literally no chance they could have run for a yard if they tried to. They did just try to on the play before. Didn't go super great.
But also, the other thing we need to talk about, we can talk about this the next time the Seahawks are at the goal line, is that they figured out this season somehow how to pass the ball to Jimmy Graham at the goal line. And they didn't do that.
Which they did on the next drive. I don't know if they completely figured it out. But Richard Sherman comes up with a big play on the following Houston drive, coming off his man DeAndre Hopkins, stepping in front of a pass intended for Anderson, whose name I'm not entirely sure of off the top of my head.
He owned Steven Anderson.
Spencer? Steven. It was Steven. I was right. I should have trusted my instincts. Anyway, returning that to the Houston 16, and then
including a Dwayne Brown unnecessary roughness.
Yeah,
on there.
Moves that to the Seahawks 8, where they passed on first and goal from the 8. I got to give them credit on that one. They did pass. Then get another first and goal at the 4 after a roughing the passer penalty on Russell Wilson. Then, which by the way was not on Jadeveon Clowney. I'm pretty sure. No, that was not the one they attributed to Jadeveon Clowney on the broadcast. That was on
Lamar Houston.
There was a different one that was incorrectly attributed to Clowney, unfairly to him. They run on first and goal at the 4. You know how they did on that one? They lost 5 yards. They took a penalty on a run play. Like, the whole point of run plays, the whole reason you run when it averages less yards than a pass is because it's supposed to be more consistent. You're not supposed to have negative plays. Like, there's only three things that can happen.
I shouldn't be so depressed
about
this game.
Bad. Well, guess what? There's pretty bad
stuff
that can happen.
You're making me sad about one of the best Seahawks win.
You gotta feel the emotional roller coaster.
That's what I want to. I want to experience this.
So then they do move the ball down to the 3 on a pass to Doug Baldwin. Get third and goal at the 3. As you mentioned, isolate Jimmy Graham. In this case, I will say on Kevin Johnson, who I don't know how big he is, but he is not, you know, like a 5'11 corner that you're like, oh, Jimmy Graham's just gonna like go right over this guy. I think Kevin Johnson's like 6'2". And he helped deflect the pass away, and it was.
But they still didn't throw it to the right place.
Which you wanted to be just basically a comeback, right? I guess only Kevin Johnson's only 6 foot.
But you throw, and how tall is Jimmy Graham?
I think he's like 6'6".
6'6" to 6 foot. You throw it to the outside shoulder, and you let Jimmy Graham go and get it. They have figured that out, and for some reason, this game they forgot it.
He's 6'7" officially.
That is a 7-inch difference.
I still don't like throwing it that far to the back shoulder in that position.
You throw it to the back shoulder and let him go get it. It's not a fade. It's not out in front of him. This ball was not in a place where Jimmy Graham can just use his size and his strength to go and make a play. They didn't put Jimmy Graham in a position to make a play here.
Well, I think he is in a position, but he's just not very good at winning at the catch point. Paul Richardson is great at winning at the catch point, even though he's much smaller than Jimmy Graham.
We have so many more possessions to go. But
I know.
At this point, the thing that I'm thinking, though, is that there are two consecutive series where the Seahawks settled for field goals, and I felt like on both of these series, they should have gone for it at fourth down.
This time in particular, I wanted to tweet that they were going to regret not going for it. I did not tweet that because I felt it would have been too pessimistic. Teams exchange punts. The Seahawks defense does subsequently get a stop. Seahawks on their following series have a Russell Wilson full start, which
was that a Russell Wilson false start?
Yeah, it was called on him for.
I swear they said number 40. It was a very weird false start.
They called it on him for bobbing his head at the line of or not at the line of scrimmage. He was in the shotgun. You basically never see that, but then he goes deep to Tyler Lockett and it's incomplete. The Houston Texans come back and answer with a 34-yard pass to DeAndre Hopkins, a 36-yard pass to Will Fuller down to the two, and two plays later, Deshaun Watson with an incredible Houdini act to escape numerous would-be sackers. That's probably not the right word. And find Lamar Miller in the end zone for the 2-yard touchdown to give the Texans the lead 31-27 with 9 minutes left in the game.
So can you tell me, since I was, you know, it's hard to tell when you're at the game, what exactly is going on? The thing that we're not talking about is all of these DeAndre Hopkins catches that are in here.
So part of it is DeAndre Hopkins just making incredible catches. The other thing that really seemed to give the Seahawks a lot of trouble is when Houston motioned, typically I think Bruce Ellington, into the backfield and gave the triple option look, which you almost never see in the NFL. But like that Will Fuller catch, I'm pretty sure, down to the two, I'm pretty sure that was off that triple
There's
option
look. There's
one
where Deshaun Watson reached his hand out with the football as if he was going to pitch it, but then pulled it back in and passed it.
Sure, I don't remember that specifically, but that would make sense. That's part of the triple option. So you're giving the triple option with the pass threat. Because, you know, the teams that run the triple option in college football, it's usually teams that have guys who cannot pass.
Yes.
They don't usually have Deshaun Watson.
Even Clemson didn't really run the triple option.
I mean, Deshaun Watson is not walking through the door at Georgia Tech or, Navy.
Air Force.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's really effing hard to stop, man.
I mean, we talked about this on Saturday, which is every NFL team should be running the spread. But anyway.
Seahawks answer, and this is where we start to get Russell Wilson.
Wait, no. I want to talk about what happened with DeAndre Hopkins. Did he beat Richard Sherman often?
A couple of times. I mean, he beat Shaquill Griffin once or twice, and then other times he was just open because that just happens sometimes.
Okay.
And then he had a 72-yard touchdown, but we're going to get to that. All right, so this is where we first start to get fourth quarter Russell Wilson.
Yes.
He's scrambling, he's making plays, and the Seahawks mostly stopped. Now, this drive they were still running. They had that Tyler Lockett end around. That didn't work any better than traditional runs.
Oh, man,
that was bad.
I like the effort.
Thomas Rawls did rush for 3 yards on first and goal.
Huge.
From the 10.
Huge play.
Which really changed the scenario, especially when he had the chop block on the next play and it became second and goal from the 22. But as it turns out, that's a better place for the Seahawks to be. And Doug Baldwin draws the pass interference to get it down to the 1. And Jimmy Graham open in the end zone on the next play for the Seahawks to retake the lead 34-31, which lasted a grand total of, let me do the math here, 48 seconds.
There were wait, was this this series? I think it was, I guess, I'm trying to think. I think it was on the series. Yeah, it was on the series. There were Texans fans behind us, because I have to say, there were so many Texans fans in this game.
So many Texans fans.
It's unbelievable, right? So you could hear that on the broadcast.
Not really for most of the game, but then when they subsequently score the touchdown to go ahead, then you could
all
hear
of a sudden they multiplied.
Yeah.
How were there that, as far as road opponents go, as far as I recall, number one most road opponents I remember was the Monday night game against Green Bay, the Fail Mary game.
Okay.
That was the most road opponents I've ever seen in a game.
Which is before the Seahawks were really the Seahawks.
And, you know, you have the entire, it's like right at the beginning of the season.
Right.
Those fans had the entire offseason to prepare for that. If they wanted to do a trip, like let's say you're from Green Bay and you wanted to go to a road game, coming to Seattle's pretty nice in September.
Yep.
Look, Seattle's great anytime. I recommend it, but I don't recommend coming to a Seahawks game.
But Pittsburgh, I wasn't at the most recent Pittsburgh game that we've talked about, but I have been at past Steelers
game. I remember you being there.
No, again, I was sitting here writing about Kobe Bryant's retirement.
Who's there?
I don't know.
You were at the Cardinals game, the Sunday night Cardinals game.
I was at that.
That was a fun game too, though.
I was at.
We lost that one, but that was a fun game.
No, it wasn't. Every game I was at that year was like either a stressful win or a loss. For a long period of time, that's actually true. Because last year, the two games I went to, I think, were the Dolphins and then losing to the Falcons.
Oh, man.
The Seahawks beat the Falcons, actually.
Yeah, you know what? We beat the Falcons. If you talk to Falcons fans,
not get that call.
Anyway, but this was one of... this might be number two. It's close with the Steelers fans.
Uh-huh.
As far as most road fans that I've ever seen. And it was shocking to see. Because you go into it and you don't expect there to be that many Houston Texans fans.
No.
There's no historical Houston Texans fans, right? They're not carrying over from the Oilers. Where did they come from?
I think they are carrying over from the Oilers. But I don't know, like, people in Seattle. There's not, like, a lot of Houston transplants necessarily.
It was a very strange to me how many Houston fans there were. And if I have to say... Well, I want to talk about Seahawks fans in a second.
All right. So this play, there's a flag on the play, and you're thinking, oh, thank God, this is all going to come back. And then it turns out it's on the Seahawks.
Are we talking the DeAndre Hopkins catch?
Yeah.
So the Seahawks are up. One play.
Two plays. Lamar Miller ran for 3 yards. This play came on
second. I do not remember that Lamar Miller rush at all.
It was pretty forgettable.
Did you watch Arizona State versus USC in the second half last night?
No.
You left my house. Arizona State literally could not tackle USC. Ronald Jones is running the ball. I mean, Arizona State defenders are there. Hypothetically, they could tackle Ronald Jones, but they can't tackle Ronald Jones. And that's what this play looked like. This looked like USC versus Arizona State in that game. And that is not ever what the Seahawks should look like.
I mean, offensively, you would like to look like USC versus Arizona State.
They didn't even look that good. If Russell Wilson looked like Sam Darnold and was missing some of those passes, I'm not feeling good. Anyway, at no point should we see the Seahawks defense being unable to make a tackle or chase down DeAndre Hopkins. I mean, this was shocking stuff to see.
But it's the same thing that happened. I mean, it's shocking to the extent that there wasn't the explanation that there was against Tennessee, where it's like 85 degrees, 90 degrees, and the defense has been on the field all game.
And that one felt different. I don't know why it felt different, but that play felt different, right? You're talking about the DeMarco Murray run, right?
Well, there was also a second play in that game that I cannot specifically remember. Maybe there was a Tywan Taylor catch?
Ancient history. But this was a shocking play to see for the Seahawks defense.
Yeah, it definitely was. I mean, I think was the stadium as stunned as, like, what was the mood?
I wish that the stadium felt more stunned.
Yeah.
But wait, let's keep going here.
So
I'll talk about the stadium in 1 second.
Then the Seahawks come back, and again, they've got Russell Wilson in Russell Wilson mode. That was Richard Matthews' 55-yard catch against the Seahawks in Houston. Russell Wilson in Russell Wilson mode. They move the ball 55 yards in 6 plays, have 1st and 10 at the Houston 20, and it's like, okay.
Yeah, they're easily going to score here.
The Seahawks are going to score here. It's like, my honest thought was, number one, you can't possibly kick a field goal. You've got to go for it on 4th down.
Exactly.
That scenario comes up. And number two, you cannot leave the Texans too much time for their final drive.
Yes.
That was my number one concern here. Instead, the one bad decision that Russell Wilson made all game.
Ugh.
There was only one, and throws an out route intended for, Paul Richardson. Yes, that was intercepted by Marcus Williams, who apparently is a player for the Texans.
What a play.
And he made an awesome play. Kudos to Marcus Williams. And that
in the
was
lineage of the other famous Marcus Williams, yeah. Like the UConn point guard.
I don't think Marcus Williams was involved in any of UConn's favorites when over UW. So then Houston comes out.
But that play, I mean, we are going into that series thinking Russell Wilson is we're going to score a touchdown here.
Russell Wilson's going to save the day.
Yeah.
Because nothing else, the running game isn't working, the defense isn't working, Russ is going to save the day.
Yes.
And then Russ didn't save the day.
And I think
at that point,
if you want to say, was the crowd devastated? At this point, I think the crowd was devastated.
Yeah, I mean, that was just, both of them were shocking, but you compounded the shockingness.
Yeah.
The shock was compounded.
Because we felt in our heart that he was going to do that, right?
Yeah.
But then, I have to say, The crowd was not good from the very beginning. I don't know what it was about this game. I told you right when I walked in, I was like, I feel like I'm in a strange place.
That is correct.
I don't recognize anybody around me. Eventually, everybody kind of settled in. But there was nobody that I knew around me. Every single person was different. I don't know why people decided that if they were going to sell their tickets, that it was going to be at this Texans game. But look, if you're a Seahawks fan and you're a season ticket holder, don't sell your tickets. Go to the game.
Or if you're going to sell your tickets to another Seahawks fan.
Find another Seahawks fan out there and sell your tickets to
them. Many people that want to go to game.
Don't sell your tickets to Texans fans because you are not helping the Seahawks win by doing that. Or you are selling your tickets to somebody who has not been to a Seahawks game before and does not know how to act at a Seahawks game.
That's a fair point.
And I sent you a picture. We are talking one of the most important drives of the game. Is there anybody standing in front of us? Maybe a couple people. But we're talking about, like, we stand every single play on defense. And there's nobody. Those people are not competing their hardest. We have all we can do is just cheer as hard as we can.
I wonder if they need to start putting something on the scoreboard.
They have to start treating these fans like they treated the fans 10 years ago.
Yeah.
They have to start treating them like these are first-time fans because it's not the same fan base anymore. These tickets are too expensive, and there are too many people coming in who have not been to Seahawks games that they don't realize that they need to be loud on these plays. And the Seahawks came up with a stop when they needed to have a stop. The crowd probably has very little to do with it, but it still is a factor.
So they did not come up with a stop at first because Deshaun Watson runs for 8 yards. So it was interesting. On first down,
they save the timeouts.
Lamar Miller run for 4 yards. They don't call a timeout. I'm like, why are you not calling the timeout? You got to call the timeout. Now, the reason not to call a timeout is because subsequently Watson runs for a first down, takes it down to the 2-minute warning, but the Seahawks still have all three of their timeouts left
gave us renewed hope.
Technically, you could have had more time left if you had called the timeout before the 2-minute warning, but I do generally like waiting for the 2-minute warning because otherwise it gives the Houston too much incentive to pass.
Yes.
If you call that timeout at like 2:04, then they can pass without having to worry about giving up the time.
And I think this is another thing that Zach Whitman tweeted, which was shouts to Bill O'Brien.
We're not there yet.
Okay.
All right, I guess we're there.
So I feel like we're there.
First down, 1 yard run, timeout 1:56. Second down, 5 yard run by Lamar Miller, where Michael Bennett like gets him by the ankle. Yeah, it looked like Lamar Miller had that first down. I was very worried. Timeout at 1:53. Third and 4 at their own 26. You've got the most dynamic running quarterback.
Terrifying third and 4.
You've got the whole playbook is open to you on third and 4, and you call Lamar Miller drop the middle.
Man,
thank you, Bill O'Brien.
Well, so that's what I was saying, is Zach Whitman with his shouts to Bill O'Brien for taking the ball out of Deshaun Watson's hands. Because if Deshaun Watson has an RPO, right?
Right.
We're terrified, and he's picking it up.
It's interesting. Bill Barnwell tweeted, the whole stadium is terrified if the Texans go for it in this 4th and 2.
Oh, I don't think they were going. I don't know if the whole stadium is terrified if they go for it on the 4th and 2.
Yeah, I mean, I think the stadium is kind of excited in that point. Yeah.
I don't know if we're excited because we knew we were coming down and scoring, but they left. The Seahawks had a lot of time on the clock.
But if you want to talk about where the whole stadium is terrified, it's if Deshaun Watson is on the edge on that 3rd and 4 with the ability to either throw it or keep it, like just in taking advantage of his skills, which they didn't whatsoever on that play. So the Seahawks, they finally get their first decent return of the day. We had talked about the Texans being bad on punt returns. In terms of covering punt returns, wasn't really a factor in this game. Tyler Lockett with an 11-yard return after a 63-yard punt by the strong-legged Shane Leckler.
Who, as you discussed, tends to outkick his coverage.
But in this game, he didn't. I mean, that was still a 52-yard net. Seahawks get the ball at their own 20 with a minute 39 left on the clock.
Let's go!
I can tell what's a minute 49 or a minute 39. One of those two. Anyway, a minute 39 because I did 99 seconds in my head. Did that math. A 48-yard pass to Paul Richardson.
Come on.
Paul Richardson is so good.
We're standing right now. We are standing. We haven't even talked about this.
He's so good at catching balls in the air. I know people hate the term high-pointing the ball because the high point of the ball is actually like midway through the pass attempt. But that's what he did, is just out-jump the defender.
That's what P. Rich does.
Why was he one-on-one? How is Houston not playing to prevent defense here? I mean, I know there's still a lot of time.
There's a lot of time on the clock.
But you can't get beat by a 48-yard pass in this situation. That's really bad. And what a great throw by Russ. Man. And that's followed by a false start on resetting on the
false start. When who's the ref in this game, by the way?
I want to say Terry McCauley.
Terry McCauley. When he's like, please reset the clock to 109. There's also a 10-second runoff to set the clock to 59 seconds. And you're like, God damn it, Reese Odhiambo.
Yeah, that looked really bad. But it wasn't really bad, as it turned out, because the Seahawks kept playing. And then Russell Wilson. First off, you'll note, not a lot of runs at this point. It was Terry McCauley. Not a lot of runs at this point in the game. Then a completion to Tyler Lockett for 19
so
yards.
So fired up right now.
And then with...
Not an easy completion to Tyler Lockett either.
So with 21 seconds left, the Seahawks are first and 10 at the Houston 18 after they get up to the line of scrimmage at that point. And call a four verts play. And the Texans do not defend Jimmy Graham, who seems like a big target.
Yes.
Seems very noticeable.
Yes.
And he's wide open.
Jimmy.
And look, I don't think they're trading Jimmy Graham. I'm just going to come out and say it. I don't think they're trading Jimmy Graham.
Not trading Jimmy Graham.
Not for Dwayne Brown. not for Dwayne Brown.
Oh, man. Whew. I mean, we lost our minds in this play, right? Because we had seen the depths. This is what football is about. There were so many people. It wasn't just that we were excited about the Seahawks. We just love the sport of football. If I could harken back to the Ringer being like, oh, do you have mid-season fatigue about the NFL? There's no fucking mid-season fatigue about the NFL. This was unbelievable.
I mean, people who have bad teams. I mean, the Texans maybe wanted a mid-season
Texans. Yeah, if you have Deshaun Watson and he threw for 400 yards against the Legion of Boom, you do not have midseason
fatigue.
That's
all very true.
You love seeing that, honestly, right? Like, this is a good game for the Texans. They lost.
They acquitted themselves
to lose.
So well.
They might be in the division as the best team in the NFL, the Jaguars, but this was a good game. There might be midseason fatigue if you're a Bears fan and you just invested top three pick in Trubisky.
Mays was very excited about the Bears game today. They held their own. They hung in there.
Well, good for them. But I'm saying there is no midseason fatigue. We lost our minds. And I heard so many people saying, I love football. Right? It was just the sport of football we were celebrating. It wasn't even the Seahawks. It was great.
It was great.
Right? This is why we pay attention to football, was this game.
Yep. That's absolutely
there
true.
There are very few moments that we get. And like I really hate myself sometimes when there are games that there are blowouts and I secretly wish that they were closer. But
you're the worst with that. I'd never wish that.
I can't help myself. But this is why we pay attention to football, because this was so exciting, right? We felt human emotion, raw human emotion in this game. We had lows, we had highs, and we had Jimmy Graham down the seam for a touchdown, and we knew we were winning at that point.
I was still nervous. Roger Bennett, Rog from the Ben and Blazers podcast, likes to talk about how he likes their version of football, soccer. Because
it's my favorite podcast ever.
I'm still this partial to this one. It allows you to experience emotions that we don't normally allow ourselves to experience in real life. That's pretty much, I think, what you're saying here.
Yes. Although I don't know if I feel that often in soccer. They tie very often to the sport of soccer, yeah. But okay.
Well, it could be a tense draw, as in last year's MLS Cup.
Yes.
And we have to wrap this up so we can actually watch the Sounders match that's currently going on here.
Oh, man.
Still very nervous until on first down, Deshaun Watson is sacked by Frank Clark.
Oh!
And that pretty much was that. Richard Sherman comes up with his second interception of the day.
Closing the door.
It was great. It was all great. Other than the fact that Earl Thomas is hurt, that is not great.
Oh, yeah.
One thing I was thinking is I would probably trade scoring the touchdown in this final drive for Earl Thomas to be healthy.
Ooh, I don't know about that. I mean,
that might be a hot take.
We'll see. We'll see what happens, but...
He's talking very positively about playing this week.
Can I retweet Katie with "Wait, is the NFL still boring?" yes.
By the way, Seahawks with 5 sacks in this game. Like I said, the pass rush was excellent, even if occasionally it lost contain. Half sack for Dwight Freeney in his Seahawks debut. Half sack for Justin Coleman with a terrific corner blitz, nickel corner blitz.
This is the only podcast we've ever recorded standing up.
It really is.
We've won Super Bowls and we've recorded podcasts. This was such an exciting game. But, okay, so we talked about it in preseason, right? We were excited about the idea of the rushing attack looking a little bit better. We were excited about Chris Carson. But we did say.
I felt some human emotions when you mentioned Chris Carson.
God, do you remember Chris Carson?
I do remember him. Maybe it was is a little bit about the running backs.
Yeah, it's about the running backs.
It's not just about the running backs.
Eddie Lacy sucks. He should be released. But if you ask me, players who I feel like should be released in order, number one is Eddie Lacy, number two is Thomas Rawls. Anyway, number three is the entire offensive line. But we talked about Russell Wilson secretly having such an impressive preseason, and to the point that we weren't even talking about it because we expect it from Russell Wilson, and this was one of his best games that he's ever played. We should ask that.
Is this the best game he's ever played? I assume the main competition has to be the Atlanta divisional round playoff game.
When we went at Atlanta in his rookie year?
Yeah, which was previously his career high in yardage until he just swamped that with 452 yards today.
Maybe the magnitude was more for that one. But it like Russell Wilson, I mean, we're talking the running backs had, was it 16 carries for 5 yards?
That is correct.
16 carries for 5 yards. And the Seahawks won by scoring 41 points.
I mean, 7 of those were on defense. 3 of them were set up by
even
the
still,
defense.
Even still, they scored 34, which statistically, the Texans are not that bad of a defense. What a game by Russell Wilson.
Yeah. Yeah.
Russell Wilson's great. God. So you said secretly I would trade Russell Wilson for Deshaun Watson. No, I would not.
Wait, did I say that?
Yeah, last week on the podcast.
Did I?
Yeah, and you were wrong because I would not trade Russell Wilson for any single player in the NFL. Anyway.
I mean, Deshaun Watson's cap hit is real low. I don't know if you're aware of that. Will be for a while.
We'll see if they'll trade him for Jimmy Graham.
There's a reason the Seahawks won their only Super Bowl when Russell Wilson was still on his rookie contract.
Oh, God. Yet, their only Super Bowl so far. Anyway, this was an amazing game, right?
Yeah. Is there anything else we need to discuss?
Probably talked for way too long about this game, but I'm so fired up right now.
Yeah.
So we'll be back on Tuesday night, Halloween night, ranking our top five.
The podcast will be out on Wednesday.
It'll be out on Wednesday, ranking our top five favorite Halloween candies.
And then all your usual accoutrement that you've come to expect.
Just Halloween candies, actually.
Okay, all that. All right. No discussion of the Sounders whatsoever or the Huskies. On that note,
thanks for listening.
Thanks.